Please, if you do not hear every word I say tonight, you may not get one thing out of the sermon. Tonight I'm going to preach a sermon I have to preach. I cannot say I want to preach it, nor can I say it's a sermon that I look forward to preaching, but I have to preach it. I want to preach tonight on this subject, the mighty are fallen in the midst of the battle. I'm going to ask every person in the house tonight to listen to every single word I say. I do not seek your sympathy, but I do say that in my travels for these, the passing of the years, my pulpit preaching from across the country has become a little bit lonely. And the fact that so many of the men with whom I preached for so many years have now joined the heavenly witnesses. For some reason or other, God put me, when I was the age of Brother Dave, God put me then on pulpits with men twice my age and over. And whoever has the baby, please do not let's have any disturbance tonight. If a child is going to talk, or whine, please take the child out immediately. I want everybody to hear every word I say. This will be, to you, one of the most blessed messages you've ever heard, or it will be a waste of time. And one thing will determine which it is, and that is whether or not you listen. I want to speak on the subject from 2 Samuel 1:25, paraphrasing the verse just a little bit. It says, how art the mighty fallen in the midst of the battle. But I want to speak tonight on a sermon I have to preach. I have to do it either tonight, here, or somewhere at some time on the subject, the mighty are fallen in the midst of the battle. Heavenly Father, I pray that the people in this room shall hang on every word I say. I spend a lot of time on this message. An awful lot of time. And I have spent days trying not to preach it. But it's burning on the inside, and I have to. And so I pray it shall not fall on thorny ground or stony ground, but on fertile ears and hearts and minds. Amen. His name was Bob Jones, Sr. I met him for the first time in a Sword of the Lord conference in Garland, Texas. Dr. John Rice was coming for a Sword of the Lord conference and invited Dr. Bob Jones, Sr. I'm sorry. If there's one man that you've never met, most of you, that I wish you could have met, that I have met, it would be Dr. Bob Jones, Sr. If there's one man, that apart from John Rice, for whom it's a shame only one generation could know him well, it certainly would have to have been Dr. Bob Jones, Sr. We shared many pulpits together across the country. He invited me, it was he who invited me, to be on the board of Bob Jones University. It was he who asked me to speak for the first time at Bob Jones University, where I've spoken many times since. He asked me to appear on the Bible conference program. His institution conferred on me the Doctor of Humanities degree at their commencement several years ago. He preached in this church when he was a very, very sick man, already senile. I remember him using the same illustration 9 times in one sermon. And some people, without respect nor appreciation, snickered and made some fun. Oh, when he died, got sick unto death, Becky loved him so dearly, our oldest daughter. She loved him so dearly. I went to Bob Jones University to speak, and Becky asked if she could go. And Doc took her with me. Dr. Bob was in the room where soon he would die. We went back in the old hospital back on the back side of the campus, back close to the motor pool there. Walked in a room, and there was the old soldier. You could almost see spiritual sabers listening on the wall. You could almost hear the trampling of the feet of Christian soldiers trained by this great general of the faith and who'd gone out from that great institution around the world to carry the message of Christ. We talked a while, and Dr. Bob spoke kindly to Becky, and then before I left, I said, "Dr. Bob, would you pray for me, please?" I knelt and put my head on his knee, between his knees, and he placed his hand on my head, and he prayed for a portion of his spirit to rest upon me. I was not his best friend, but I was his good friend. He was not my best friend, but he was my good friend. And I'm glad that my path crossed his in my late 20s and early 30s. Oh, how he could unfurl the crimson banner of the cross. He could not be fenced in any more than you can fence in the fragrance of a rose garden. The world hated him as darkness hates light, as discord hates music, and as disease hates medicine. I recall that time, and much of some of this sermon will be a bit of repetition because I want you to hear, all of you to hear, some things that some of you have heard. I remember Dr. Bob Jones Sr. was preaching for me in Garland, Texas, and he and Dr. Rice and Brother Roloff were preaching. And Brother Roloff was preaching, and Dr. Jones was sitting over here on my right, and I was sitting right behind the pulpit in the middle, and Dr. Rice was sitting over here. And I was just a young preacher. My, what a thrill it was for me to have Dr. John Rice on one side, Brother Dr. Bob Jones on the other, Brother Lester Roloff preaching. Roloff was preaching on television. Never forget it. Preached an hour and a half on television. What's wrong with it? You know, the antenna is the mark of the beast and other great exegesis of the Scriptures. And so he about an hour and 15 minutes into his sermon, oh, everybody had television set, was under the pew. And right in about an hour and 15 minutes, nothing but what's wrong with television. Old Dr. Bob leaned across me, and he did like he used to do like this when he'd talk, and he did like this to his lapel, and he leaned across me and said, "Brother John," he called Dr. Rice, "Brother John." He said, "Brother John, Brother John." And Dr. Rice said, "Yes, Dr. Bob, what is that?" And Dr. Bob said, "Brother John." And I got my pen and paper out to write it down because I didn't want to miss it. I mean, when Roloff's preaching and Bob Jones Sr. speaks to John Rice, I want to write it down for posterity. I wanted you to get it because you ought to know the great truths that are spoken on platforms when great sermons are being preached. And so with Roloff tirading against television, Dr. Bob Jones Sr. leaned across me and tapped the knee of Dr. John Rice and said, "Dr. John." And I said, "Yes, Dr. Bob." He said, "I don't care what he says. I still like I Love Lucy." I remember, often I've told this story. I want to share it with numbers of you who've never heard it. This is the sweetest story I know. This is my favorite illustration of sweetness and the greatness of a great man. When Dr. Bob Jones came to our home for the first time, he came for a Sunday noon meal. Becky was 3 years old. That's been 27 years ago. And Becky had golden ringlets. Her little hair was gold, not blonde. It was as gold as the brightest sunrise you ever saw. And Becky came up with her thumb in her mouth, where all little three-year-old thumbs ought to be and are. And Dr. Bob, God bless him, never missed a child. And Dr. Bob looked, and before he said hello to me, he said, "Hello there, what is your name?" And Becky looked at him and said, and I said, "Her name is Becky." And he said, "How old are you?" And Becky looked at him and said, and I said, tell him how old. And Becky said, this many. And he guessed that was three. And Dr. Bob looked at her and he said, "Becky," he said, "do you like candy?" And Becky looked at him and said, And Dr. Bob reached in his pocket like this and pulled out a little package of Lifesavers, little small donut-like candy, you know, assorted flavored Lifesavers, a little package about that long, about that big around. He reached in his pocket and gave to Becky a little package of assorted flavored Lifesavers. And she reached into her breast and she gave her heart to Bob Jones Sr. Oh, she loved him. I've never seen a child speak about a preacher like Becky spoke about Bob Jones Sr. Never have. Every time Brother Roloff would come and preach, she'd say, he's good, but I like Bob Jones Sr. better. And Brother Dr. Robertson would come. I like Dr. Robertson, but I like Dr. Bob Jones Sr. is a better preacher. And I even got jealous of the old man. I'll tell you for sure. she loved him. Her dream at that time was to go to Bob Jones University. And she would have if somebody hadn't gone to Tennessee Temple that she was interested in. And the Lord led her to follow him. She loved Dr. Bob Sr. When Becky was 13, I went to Bob Jones University alone to preach. I preached in chapel the first day I was there. And that was, I think, on a Thursday, maybe a Wednesday. And Dr. Bob, now, at that time, was up in years. He was senile. He was staying in the room where later on he was to die. He was pointed toward death like an arrow to its mark. And they used to have in the old dining hall, upstairs where the president's room was. And all the guests went up there, and I was upstairs looking down, like having a president's room here, big dining hall here. And I went up there, and I was eating with the family, and old Dr. Bob Sr. came. And he said, Doc Kyle, I heard your sermon on the radio. They won't let me come to chapel, but I heard your sermon on the radio. He said, I felt like hitting the mourner's bench. And I said, thank you, Dr. Bob. And Dr. Bob said, now bear in mind, he's up in years. It's been 10 years since he saw Becky. He saw her one time. She was 3 years old. It's been 10 years. He's senile. He used the same illustration time after time in a sermon. And Dr. Bob said, Dr. House, how's Becky? How's Becky? Dr. Bob, do you remember Becky? That great man in all of his great campaigns, remembering a little 3-year-old girl, 10 years. I said, do you remember Becky? He said, well, of course. Golden hair, likes Lifesavers. And I said, Dr. Bob, I said, you're her favorite preacher. Great tears rolled down his old war-stained cheeks. He said, I am. Who was it who wrote? Was it Tennyson who wrote, so nigh is grandeur to our dust, so near is God to man. When duty whispers low, thou must, the youth replies, I can. And Dr. Bob showed his humanity as tears streamed down his cheeks. And he said, I'm her favorite preacher. I said, yes, Dr. Bob. How old is Becky now, Dr. Hiles? She's 13 this coming Saturday, Dr. Bob. 13? I can't believe it. Becky is a teenager? She will be Saturday, Dr. Bob. I preached on Thursday. I preached on Friday. Came back during the night on Friday night. Got back home Saturday morning about breakfast time. There was a doorbell ring. I went to the door a delivery boy said, package for Becky Jan Hiles. And Becky came bouncing down, and she said, oh, goody, goody, Daddy, it's a birthday present. And I said, it's for you, Becky. And she went down and got it. And then Becky began to clap her hands and said, oh, Daddy, it's from Dr. Bob Jones Sr., a birthday present from Dr. Bob Jones Sr. And she opened it as quickly as a 13-year-old can open a package, which is an all-time record. And she opened it. I'll give you two guesses what it was. It was a carton of assorted flavor Lifesavers. Word came. Dr. Bob was gone. Becky came, put her head on my knee and cried. And I wept. The mighty was fallen. His sword is now sheathed. His helmet hangs on the wall. His shield is quiet and still. His spear is encased. His steed is lonely. His throne is empty. His scepter is rusty. His arms are stacked. The mighty is fallen. But I want you to get the text. The mighty is fallen in the midst of the battle. He's gone. Battle goes on. Who's going to take his place?
Who's going to fight? I mean, the mighty have fallen in the midst, not in the end of the battle, in the midst of the battle. Rouse then, soldiers, rally round the banner, ready, steady, pass the word along, onward, forward, shout out, Hosanna, Christ is captain of the mighty throng. Onward, Christian soldiers, marching as to war. We'll move at his command, we'll soon possess the land. There's loyalty, loyalty, loyalty to Christ. The fight is on, O Christian soldier. The mighty is fallen
in the midst of the battle.
Battle rages. War still on. Dr. Bob Jones Sr. is gone.
But the battle still rages. His name is Dr. Beecham Vick. I'd heard of him for many years. I saw him for the first time at the Castleberry Baptist Church of Fort Worth, Texas. When I preached, looked out in the audience and sitting right over here was the famous Dr. Beecham Vick, at that time, pastor of the largest church in the world, the Great Temple Baptist Church of Detroit, Michigan. He came to Garland, Texas for a short conference. It was he who introduced me to the character Mephibosheth in the Bible. We shared pulpits together across America. I preached often in his pulpit in the Great Temple Baptist Church in Detroit, Michigan, through the years of his ministry there. It was he who dedicated this half of this building, and we dedicated this building in 1964. The first Sunday night, Dr. Beecham Vick came and preached for us on Sunday night and dedicated this part of this building. I preached for him one time for a week at the Baptist Bible College in Springfield, Missouri, where he was the president for many years. We shared many motel rooms together. I only have one complaint about Dr. Vick. He didn't want to go to sleep at night. He wanted to talk all night. Fellowship in this man at night, one night in Denver, Colorado. He talked so long, I went to sleep, slept an hour. Woke up, he was still talking and didn't even know I wasn't listening. He loved the fellowship, especially when I wanted to sleep. Years ago, I was in Rochester, Michigan. He preached on Monday night, and after he preached, I preached. He preached on Tuesday night, and after he preached, I preached. I'd never heard Dr. Vick preach like he preached that night. He was a great man. I would not say that he was no R.G. Lee in the pulpit. He was certainly a marvelous preacher, but he was a great man, one of the greats. But that night he was a great preacher, a great preacher. He preached on heaven. The streets were never so golden. The gates were never so pearly. The river of life was never so clear. And the fruit on the tree of life was never so sweet, and the face of Jesus was never so lovely. I couldn't understand it. I sat back in the back, waiting my time to preach, and heard that man preach like I'd never heard him preach before. He finished preaching. He walked down right here, and I came down. I met him right there on the steps, and I looked at him, and I put my arm on his shoulder, and I said, Dr. Vick, I never heard you like that before. That's the most marvelous sermon on heaven I ever heard. I didn't know that was the last sermon he'd ever preached. I didn't know that Dr. Vick was tiptoeing and getting a glimpse of the holy city. I didn't know. I thought he was preaching the Bible. I didn't know he was studying what he was seeing. Monday, in Rock Springs, Wyoming, when I checked in the hotel, the lady said, there's a call. Please return a call to your secretary. I called Mrs. McKinney, and she said, Dr. Vick just dropped dead with a heart attack in Springfield. I did not know the last sermon he would preach was the one he preached on heaven. I said, and I say now, I think the earth became too small for him. Unlike others, he was always himself. His bow is now warped. His arrows, because of inactive activity, are now crooked. His boots are in the closet. His quiver is empty. And his saber is sheathed. The mighty are fallen. The mighty is fallen. And yet, the Bible says, the mighty is fallen in the midst of the battle. Somebody's got to keep fighting. Dr. Vick is gone. The battle is not. Dr. Vick is gone.
Now the next generation has to pick up the sword. And the next generation has to fill its boots. And the next generation has to unsheath the saber. And the next generation has to pull back the bow. And the next generation has to empty the quiver. And the next generation has to point the arrow. And the next generation has to hurl the stone. And the next generation has to render the sweat. And the next generation has to shed the blood. And the next generation has to gird the armor. And the next generation has to hold the shield. The mighty is fallen in the midst of the battle. But the battle's not over. The battle still rages. Rouse then, soldier. Ready, round the banner. Ready, steady, pass the word along. Onward, forward, shout out. Hosanna, Christ is captain of the mighty throng. Onward, Christian soldiers, marching as the war. The fight is on, O Christian soldier. The fight is on. We'll move at his command. We'll soon possess the land. 'Tis loyalty, loyalty, loyalty to Christ. We've got to stay in the battle. The old soldiers have passed off the scene, and their guns are sighted. And they smoke no more from their muzzles, and their swords are sheathed, and the battle is over them, but they died in the midst of the battle, and we've got to keep on fighting the battle that they fought. His name was John Rice. The first time I met him was at a dinner table in Garland, Texas. I had heard of him since I was a child. I used to pick up the Saturday Dallas Times Herald, which was had a big church page. When I was a little boy, I'd read the advertisements about the sermons. A fellow named John Rice was going to preach at the Galilean Baptist Church, which was one block from where I went to high school. Every morning I went to high school, I walked by. Close enough to see the Galilean Baptist Church, and I could see the name John R. Rice, pastor. That's all he was to me then. And then when I was in college, stumbled across a newspaper in Bible class one day, in Dean Smith's Bible class. Picked it up, and there was a caption said, "Sword of the Lord opposes formalism, modernism, and worldliness." A picture of Billy Sunday on the front, and a sermon by Billy Sunday. During the Bible class, I did what I should not have done, but I read the Sword of the Lord, and if you'd had my Bible teacher, you'd read anything you could find. You'd have read the dictionary. As I said last night in ordination, my Bible teacher was so dry, one time he lost an outline, and a cow ate it, dried it up just like that. I read the Sword of the Lord, and then I began to take it. And then I began to dream of the day when I could shake the hand of Dr. John Rice. We read in the Sword he was coming to Siloam Springs, Arkansas for a Sword conference and bringing with him Dr. Lee Robertson, Dr. Bob Jones Sr., and others. All of us right-wingers in the Southern Baptist College that I attended saved our pennies to get to go to Siloam Springs, about a 300-mile drive. I did not save enough. Only one did. His name was Lyndall Whitehead. Lyndall Whitehead got to go. He got to meet John Rice, shake his hand. He signed his Bible. He got to meet Bob Jones Sr., shake his hand, got his signature in his Bible. He got to meet Lee Robertson, those men that to us were just names that someday we hope to just look at. When Lyndall Whitehead came back, I asked him if he'd shake my hand. I said, if I can't shake John Rice's hand, I want to shake the hand that shook John Rice's hand. I did not know then. I was to sit beside him 2,200 times on platforms across this land. I did not know then. I've sat across the table from him hundreds of times. Put his coat on him when he finished and give him his hat. I did not know then I'd shine his shoes if they needed shining. Press his suit if it needed pressing. I did not know then that I would have sermons innumerable appear in the Sword of the Lord and have my picture there. I did not know then that I would someday become for a while an assistant editor of the Sword of the Lord and conference director and plan his engagements around the country. I did not know that then. One day a letter came to Garland, Texas to me. It was from Dr. Rice. He said, I want you to preach in the Sword of the Lord conference. In Lake Louise, Georgia. He said, you and Dr. R.G. Lee will be the main speakers.
I wasn't much older than my son now. And I thought I got the wrong letter. I had my secretary call the sword and tell them, Brother Hiles got a letter you wrote somebody else. Did you write him one? We'd like to have that sent to him. I had no idea. And his secretary said, that is Brother Hiles' letter. And in my late 20s, I sat on the platform beside Bob Jones Sr., John Rice, and R.G. Lee. R.G. Lee preached his sermon, Payday Someday, and then they introduced me. I looked at my outline called The Autopsy of a Dead Church. If ever a sermon outline needed a blood transfusion, mine did. I sat with his family at the table that night. I pinched myself to see if it was real. I'm sitting. I met Joanna and Joy and Libby and Jesse and Mary Lois and Grace. And in walked a big, tall, good-looking fella. I'd seen his picture in the sword, and they said, this is Dr. Bill Rice. Little old country preacher like me. Little old poor boy from the ghettos of Texas like me. Sitting at the table and eating with the Rice family. I couldn't believe it. I did not know that I was to preach over 2,200 times. I walked closely with him. I observed him. The fire of his greatness quivered in his entire body as he would preach and pray. He was a spirit-filled Will Rogers. And as I said at his funeral service, he walked so far above most of us that he was willing to stop and stoop to walk with us. He was greatness clothed with humility. He was maturity clothed for our sakes with a touch of childhood. He was theology bathed in practicality. He was profundity choosing to wear the garment of simplicity so he could appear to be dressed like us simple people. He was an eagle willing to fly with sparrows. He was depth, appearing to be shallow, in order that us shallow ones might go to greater depths. He was eloquent, ever-present, but seldom used, in order that we might understand him. He was a deep-sea diver, willing to wade with little children. He was royalty, who was somewhat timid to be on his throne. He was scholarship, veiled with propriety. He could quote Shakespeare and make it appear to be a nursery rhyme. He could blend beautifully the graduate school with the grade school. He was a marriage of grace and truth. He was strength betrothed to beauty. He built the structure of zeal upon the foundation of knowledge. In him, mercy and truth kissed each other. He was a rare combination of honor and majesty. Love and justice walked arm in arm in his life. Compassion and conviction merged, and courage and patience were joined together. And as I said at his funeral, to know him better was to appreciate him more. To get closer to him was to be more convinced of his greatness. To inspect him more carefully was to find new hues in a remarkable treasure. The microscope revealed his greatness. He was both king and subject. He was both teacher and student. He was both general and private. He was both leader and follower. He was everybody's pastor and everybody's grandfather. He knew words he could not use and had thoughts he could not share. And as I said, could I forget the time he was preaching in Milford, Ohio, and we couldn't find him. He just preached a great sermon on the Holy Spirit, and we couldn't find him. Time to eat. Where's Dr. Rice? Where's Dr. John Rice? We couldn't find him. And finally somebody said, there he is, down the road. He was down on a sidewalk several houses down the road playing hopscotch with some little boys and girls. Can I see him, forget him, as he said, little children? I've been needing a little girl at my house. I'd give $1.95 for a girl like you. Or can I see him? He'd say to me on Monday morning, he'd say, Dr. Hiles, how was the service? How was the service yesterday? I'd say, fine, Dr. Rice, great services. He'd say, if that church in Hammond just had a pastor, I think they'd be a good church. And I'd say, they got a pastor. Oh, they have one that's filling in, so they can find one. And I can remember him saying, climbing in the back seat of the Volkswagen, so I could sit in the front seat. I can see a tear escaping his eyes in Johnson City, Tennessee, when he was betrayed by a friend of a lifetime. I can see him preaching with tears to 9 people in Sioux City, Iowa, with the same vigor if he preached to 9,000 people. I can see him behind this pulpit singing, the windows of heaven are open, open, the blessings are falling. Tonight is joy, joy, joy in my heart, since Jesus made everything, everything right. Can you hear him? You couldn't hear him, could you? I can hear him. As Bill Harvey would join in and sing with him on the next stanza. I can see him always ordering the cheapest thing on the menu. I can see him giving away his love offering in Tokyo, Japan to a missionary and coming home without enough money to pay his bill. I can see him in Tampa, Florida on his knees at 2 o'clock one morning. He didn't know I was there. I heard him as he prayed for our nation and tears poured down his cheeks and on the carpet as he prayed for America. I can see him always volunteering to preach first so I could preach the main service to follow. I can see him saying to the stewardess when I should say, you want some coffee, sir? I said, no, ma'am, I don't drink coffee or whiskey. But he drinks both. So she'd bring Dr. Rice some coffee. And I said, make me some hot tea. And he'd say, stewardess, put a little arsenic in his hot tea, would you please? And I can see him meeting me in the morning, going out to the car to go preach somewhere. Whose side are you on this morning, Dr. Hiles? I'm on the Lord's side. And then the word came about his stroke. And then the suffering, the fighting to live. And then at 2 o'clock, 3 weeks ago tonight, the call came in the morning hours that Dr. Rice had gone to heaven. The mighty is fallen. The mighty is fallen. Somebody said at the funeral, they said, Dr. Howes, you looked at the funeral service like the whole load of America was on your shoulders in the midst of the battle. Bob Jones is gone. Beecham Vick is gone. John Rice is gone. But the battle is not gone. The battle still rages. The enemy is still trying to conquer. God is still giving the command to fight the good fight of faith. Rouse then, soldier. Ready. Round the banner. Ready. Steady. Pass the word along. Ready. Steady. Forward in the battle. Christ is captain of the mighty throne. Onward, Christian soldiers. Marching as to war with the cross of Jesus going on before. The fight is on, O Christian soldier. We'll move at his command. We'll soon possess the land. Disloyalty. Loyalty. Loyalty to Christ. This whole world ever needed somebody to fight us tonight. Didn't say the mighty have fallen in the end of the battle. They fought in the midst of the battle. His name was Bill Rice. I saw him the first time at the Bill Rice Ranch. I shook his hand the first time in Lake Louise, Georgia. What a personality. To Dr. Bill Rice, the whole world was one big ranch. And preaching was just branding time. The invitation was a roundup. And the gospel broadcast was a rodeo program to him. Hollywood wanted him, but he did not spend their kind of money. He was sanctified rawhide. He was what Roy Rogers and John Wayne wanted to be and couldn't be. A real preacher and a real cowboy. What a personality. He called me Solomon. He thought I was smart. I hear him now on the phone. Mr. O'Brien would say, long distance, Dr. Bill Rice. Hello? Howdy, Solomon! By the way, Solomon, I've got a problem, Solomon. Need some advice. Need some counsel, Solomon. He loved life. I never met a man who loved life more than Bill Rice did. I recall one year he and I were preaching together in Tallahassee, Florida. And Jim Stoutenborough, his hall leader and helper, good friend of all of us, and Jim Stoutenborough flew his plane down to pick up Dr. Bill and fly him back from Tallahassee, Florida. And he got there just in time for the service, and he went out to eat about after the service with Howard Johnson. And Dr. Bill, Jim Stoutenborough, the pastor and I, were eating there, Pastor Taylor, Bob Taylor, and so we're eating there. And the waitress came up. And I said to the waitress, I said, "Do you know who that is sitting over there?" She said, "Who?" And I said, "You better sit down, because when you hear the name, you're going to be shocked. He'd come to your restaurant." She sat down. I said, "Now, will you believe me if I tell you the truth?" "Yeah, yeah. Who is he? Who is he?" And I said, "Now look, I, it's true. I'm not kidding. I'm telling you exactly who he is. That man sitting right over there is." She said, "Who? Who?" I said, "Now, are you sure you're going to believe me?" "Yeah, I'll believe you. Who is it?" And I said, "That is Jim Stoutenburg." Nobody knew Jim Stoutenburg. But after I'd taken on like that, told him, she didn't dare admit she didn't know him, because surely anybody as famous as he was, she'd know. She said, "Is that Jim Stoutenburg?" And Dr. Beale was over there going, and I said, "Ask him." He said, "Hey, by the way, man, that's Jim Stoutenburg right there." I said, "Now, let me ask you a question. Did you ever think Jim Stoutenburg would eat in your restaurant?" She said, "Oh, no, never did." I said, "I'll tell you what," Dr. Bill said, "I'll tell you what, you're going to give him good treatment, aren't you?" "Oh, yes." Dr. Bill said, "If I were you, I'd read the menu to him." Said, "We can read our own, but I'd read it to him." He said, "Because you know who that is, don't you?" He said, "You reckon the other ladies in this restaurant know Jim Stoutenburg's here?" She walked over and called a waitress, and she said, "Come here." And the waitress said, "What is it?" And she said, "That one right there, that's Jim Stoutenburg." She didn't want to act dumb either. "It is." "Jim Stoutenburg." She brought us all menu. She threw me one, threw Dr. Bill one, threw the pastor one. She went over and started reading the menu to Jim Stoutenburg. And I said to her, I said, "Listen for a minute." I said, "You better tell him you're honored to have him here. He didn't know all this going on." And there she was reading the menu, and she walked over and she said, "Mrs. Stoutenburg," she said, "we're so honored to have you here in our restaurant." And Dr. Beale said, "Come here." He said, "Don't you think you ought to ask him for his autograph?" She walked over and said, "Would you sign the menu right here?" Listen, nobody loved life like Bill Rice did, except Jim Stoutenburg. And then there was Dallas, and Atlanta, and Chattanooga, and Jacksonville, and Louisville. And with Dr. John Rice, the other night I was going down the calendar, Dr. John Rice, there was Seattle and Portland. We were together. And there was Sacramento and San Francisco and Fresno and Los Angeles and Canoga Park and San Diego and Phoenix and Albuquerque and Tucson and Denver and Boise and Twin Falls and Billings and Des Moines and Omaha and Minneapolis and Lincoln and Oklahoma City and Tulsa and Dallas and Fort Worth and El Paso and Amarillo and Tyler in East Texas and Houston and Shreveport and New Orleans and Mobile. And there was Birmingham and Atlanta and Miami and Tampa and St. Petersburg and Orlando and Daytona Beach and Jacksonville and Columbia, South Carolina and Greenville, South Carolina and Charlotte and Winston-Salem and Louisville and Danville, Virginia and Lynchburg and Washington, D.C. and Philadelphia, and on and on I could go. And with Dr. Bill, much the same. And then I recall that every year for 20 years I preached at the ranch. And then that last time he preached here, when he stood and preached the greatest commencement sermon I ever heard. Before he walked over here, he was very quiet. Dr. Bill was never quiet. Never quiet. Dr. Bill was the guy that woke the rooster up in the morning and told him to get with it. And he was never quiet. And he was standing over here in the corner of the education building room. And I walked over and I said, "Dr. Bill, you're mighty quiet tonight. I said, Dr. Bill, what's the trouble? And he said, Dr. House, I don't feel very well. I think he knew. But oh, the sermon he preached that night from this pulpit. What a message at commencement. And then I was out in Colorado. So many things. Preaching up in the mountains of Colorado. And for the ACE. Big meeting. And went out there. And that night, I didn't know it was up in the mountains. It was summertime. I'd taken two summer suits. All up to two seersucker suits. Bought it from some sucker downstairs. And two seersucker suits. And I took them out. And they said, it's in Colorado. And it's summertime. Well, good night. It's 100 degrees. 95 and 100. Went out there, and it was 8,000 feet up in the air where they had the meeting. A tent, no heat, 20 degrees that night. I said 20. People came in sleeping bags and laid down and rolled themselves in blankets. And that's what I preached to. And there, what was up on the platform in a summer suit, 20 degrees, no heat in the tent, 8,000 feet. I like to froze to death. It took me half the night to thaw out. And then they said, Dr. Powers, tomorrow morning you're preaching at 6 o'clock. Out of doors. Oh, my soul, I'll freeze to death. Out of doors. And so I thought, you won't get me tomorrow morning. So I put on two suits. I put on both pairs of underwear, both pairs of socks, both pairs of pants. I put on both coats and a sweater I borrowed under here, and even put on my overcoat and put on both coats and wore my hat, borrowed a hat, and put a hat on, and went out beside the side of the mountain. Oh, it was cold. Oh, my soul, it was cold. And but there I was. I had both coats and both pants and a sweater and two shirts and two pairs of underwear and two pairs of socks and two pairs of breeches on. And but the sun came up. And in the mountains, when the sun comes up, the temperature goes up as fast as the sun comes up. And it rose from being under 20 to 90, over 90 that day. And most of it while I was preaching that morning. And there I was, just dripping wet with sweat out there, up in the mountain, the sun up. And I took off a coat, and I took off the second coat, and I took off the sweater. If I'd taken off my shirt, I'd come to myself. And I took off my sweater, and I still was about to die. And I could take off was one of the pair of pants, but nobody knew I had on two pair of pants. And so I was about to die. I was dying. I was hot. And finally I said, folks, I don't mean to be a rude, unkind, or uncouth, but I said, you're about to see something you have never seen a preacher do in your life. And I reached down and took off one pair of pants. When I unbuttoned the pants, the whole crowd went, whoo! When they saw I had a second pair, they all went, after I preached on Monday night, went back to the little cabin where I was staying and sat up in the mountains. Somebody came in a car and said, long distance call from Pete Rice, Murfreesboro, Tennessee. It's an emergency. And I rushed to the telephone. Had to drive about 5 miles. Never forget it, because I never saw so many mosquitoes in my life in that old telephone booth on the side of the mountain. And I called the Bill Rice Ranch and asked for Pete Rice. And he said, Dr. Hiles, he said, my dad had a massive stroke. We don't know how long he's going to live. You remember how he came for treatments up here at Dr. Streeter. By the way, Mrs. Bill Rice was almost blind in one eye, and Dr. Cal Streeter's treatments enabled her to see in that eye. A lot of folks don't know that. He sat right back there one Wednesday night. he could hardly talk. He couldn't make sense. Paralyzed nearly. And then flew home. He took a nap one day and woke up and said to his wife, it's finished. It's finished. His wife said, what is it, Bill? He said, my work's finished. She said, oh, that's not true. No, it's finished. Very quietly, laid his head on his bed. And the angels came. The angels came wearing cowboy boots and lassoed him and put him on a horse and took him to the heavenly corral. And the mighty was fallen. I spoke at his funeral. The mighty was fallen. In the midst of the battle.
Battle's not over. No, sir. Generals are dead. We need new generals. Captains are dead. Need new captains. The battle is still raging. The mighty has fallen, not at the end of the battle, in the midst of the battle. Rouse then, soldier. Rally. Round the banner. Ready. Steady. Pass or along. Onward. Forward. Shout out. Hosanna. Christ is captain of the mighty throng.
Onward, Christian soldiers, marching as to war with the cross of Jesus going on before.
Like a mighty army moves the church of God. The fight is on, O Christian soldiers. We'll move at His command. We'll soon possess the land. For loyalty, loyalty, loyalty to Christ.
His name was Ford Porter. I met him in Indiana, Indianapolis. Every year I preached for him. Every special event he ever had in Indianapolis, he asked me to come and bring the message. He had a hotline straight to heaven. He had the breast of Jesus for his pillow, and his prayers were like bullet-like bombs that caused heaven to take action when they landed on its shores. He asked God for a worldwide ministry. He was not a great preacher, but he's a great prayer. And God gave him that famous tract, God's Simple Plan of Salvation. I have never been to a country in all my travels around the world yet where I did not see that tract, God's Simple Plan of Salvation. On his 80th birthday, he asked me to come and preach at his birthday party. I went down and preached in the church, Lifegate Baptist Church there, Dr. Ford Porter, on his 80th birthday. I bought him a suit while I was there that day. He was so proud of it. He said nobody ever bought him a suit before, a preacher. He called it his Jack Hyle suit. He came here. We honored him, and I'll not forget the prayer he prayed from this pulpit. And then illness. And then he went to church one last Sunday. But he said he wouldn't go to church unless they got him the Jack Hyle suit to wear to church. They said, it's too big, Dad. It's too big. He said, get it altered. They took it down and got it altered to fit him. The last Sunday he went to church, he wore the Jack Hyle suit. And then he said, I want to be buried in the Jack Hyle suit. The Jim Vineyard came down the hallway in the office one Saturday morning and said, Dr. Hyle, they want the house. They want you to call Ford Porter's church. His son wants to talk to you. They said, would you preach the funeral service? Dr. John Rice spoke about 3 minutes, and Dr. Bob Jones spoke about 3 minutes, and John Rawlins spoke about 3 minutes and others. And I brought about a 35-40 minute message, I guess. Boy, the mighty has fallen. But in the midst of the battle, his name was R.G. Lee. I traveled many miles to hear him when I was a college student. He wrote the introduction for my church manual. When he gave me the introduction, he said, Brother Hiles, he said, I'd have just read that 30 years ago. Tears came down his old cheeks, and he said, if somebody just told me 30 years ago what's in that manual. R.G. Lee, one of my heroes, saying that to me. Last time he ever preached here, we walked out that door, right outside that door. He looked at me with tears in his eyes, and he said, Dr. Powell, did I do all right? Did I do all right? Is the ocean wet? Is the sun hot? Is the sky high? Is communism red? Is Carter a peanut farmer? Did I do all right? Did I do all right? On to Garland, Texas, where he preached. He was mugged in an elevator. They rushed him to the hospital. He took 11 stitches across his brow and said, Dr. Lee, you'll stay here overnight. You have a concussion. You might be bad sick. You just took 11 stitches. And said, Dr. Lee, you can't. You have to stay overnight. Dr. Lee said to the old Southern drawl, sir, I can't stay overnight. I'm preaching payday someday at Levon Dry Baptist Church at 7:30. And they said, Dr. Lee, you understand, you might be bad sick. He said, sir, if I'm bad sick now, I'll still be bad sick when I finish preaching payday someday at Levon Dry Baptist Church at 7:30. They said, Dr. Lee, we think you must be having some mental trouble. He said, if I'm crazy now, I'll still be crazy when I finish preaching payday someday at Levon Dry Baptist Church. And that old 90-year-old soldier of Calvary stood behind that pulpit and preached for an hour and a half that famous sermon. He preached over 1,100 times payday someday. And they called me. And they said he's had a heart attack. And they lingered. He told me outside this door when we gave him his check, we gave him $3,000 for one sermon. He deserved it. He began to weep. And he said, Dr. House, I'm 90 years old. That's the biggest offering I ever got anywhere for anything. He said, even for a two-week revival, I never got that much money. We're not sorry now we did it. They asked me to be an honorary pallbearer. John Olson went down, took my place. He was a sanctified William Jennings Bryan. To him, the sky was a studio and the clouds were paintings done with watercolors. The mighty is fallen in the midst of the battle. But the battle still rages. I'm thankful for the nation they gave me. I'm thankful for those men who were preaching before I was born, whose paths I got to cross, whose words of wisdom I got to hear. I'm glad they stayed in the battle.
And the very right we have tonight to stand in this building, and the right I have to open this book and preach what I'm preaching tonight,
because those old soldiers stayed in the battle. 2 Timothy 2:3 tells me I'm supposed to endure hardness as a good soldier. 2 Timothy 2:4 says I'm chosen to be a soldier. Ecclesiastes 8:8 says there's no discharge from this war. 1 Timothy 6:12 says fight the good fight of faith. 2 Timothy 4:7 says I fought a good fight. 1 Corinthians 9:26 says so fight I. They're gone. They left in the midst of the battle, but the battle goes on. They fought well. Their swords are still. Their voices are silent. Their armor is packed away. They hold an honorable discharge. And now we are on center stage. There's one thing tonight that Bob Jones Sr., John R. Rice, Beecham Vic, Bill Rice, Ford Porter, and R.G. Lee have in common. One thing. They're dead. They're gone. For some of us, the world's a bit lonely because they're gone. But the battle is still raging. The battle is still raging. There's a boy over here that calls me Dad. One of these days he'll speak at my funeral probably. And my sword will be sheathed. And my shield will be laid beside me. And my bow will be quietened. And my tongue will be silenced in death. And my boots will be empty, and my quiver will be unused, and my arrows unshot, and all of my sermons preached. I hope he can feel. Becky and Linda and Cindy can feel that they had stayed in the war, stayed in the battle. Young preachers, time to grow up. Somebody said, how did you feel when Dr. Rice died? I said, I felt like I wasn't a preacher boy anymore. It's time to grow up. It's time to get in the battle. Deacons, it's time you got busy. Sunday school teachers,
there is no discharge. But you say, Brother Hiles, I will resign my class. There is no discharge from this war, and if you quit, you will be A-W-O-L.
Rouse, then, soldiers. Ready. Pound the banner.
Ready. Steady. Pass the word along. Onward. Forward. Shout out. Hosanna. Christ
is captain of the mighty throng. Must I be carried to the skies on flowery beds of ease, while others fought to win the prize and sail through bloody seas? No, I must fight, if I would gain. Increase my courage, Lord. I'll bear the toil, endure the pain, supported by Thy word. These cheeks are often stained. There has been some activity on them in the last 24 hours. or 48 hours. There's an enemy.
He's trying to destroy everything that you and I hold dear. He's trying to wreck the greatest nation on the face of God's green earth. He's trying to say this book is not so. He's trying to get your boys and girls and sell them into impurity and indecency. He's trying to take away the freedom of the land of the free and the home of the brave. He's got his guns pointed toward us and toward you. We must stay in the battle. We must not turn back.
The mighty is fallen in the midst.